going to include a disclaimer at the beginning of this episode. In this episode, I will be discussing some graphic theories, and there will be some adult language during the debunking part of this episode. I will announce it before I start that dialogue, so you will have the chance to skip over it. There will also be talk of sexual assault and sexual motive. All of this information was found through articles and forums online. None of the videos mentioned or the news audio played throughout is mine. None of the theories are mine. They are pure speculation, and most have no real basis. Take everything except the facts with a grain of salt. I am here to give all the information I can find. I am not pushing any theories or suspects forward. So this is being put in after I already released the episode once, and I'm going back and kind of editing it because the volume was very messed up. I got a lot of comments about it, and then I listened to it a second time, and I definitely see what everyone means. So hopefully on this one, I've adjusted it right. I'm still new to using this editor, so we will see how it goes. I would like to say that when I am stating suspects, these are suspects I found through articles or forums online. They are not people I believe to be suspects, so I am not pushing suspects. There was some confusion with me talking about the Derek Godsey guy and how he should not be pushing suspects. And I understand that I am stating suspects in this episode, but they're not people that I believe to be suspects. And I also say a few of them have been cleared. They are just people that law enforcement had looked into and that others link to the case through other things. Okay, I wanted to clarify that. And just remember, none of this is really my own unless I say this contains my own speculation, which I know I do in like a few parts of the episode, but I do not in the suspects part or the theories part. So please just understand that this is not my views. I am just here to give you all the information as a whole.
Of Abigail Williams, 13 years old, and Liberty German, 14 years old. The girls had had a sleepover the night before at Liberty's home that she shares with her father and grandparents. They had this freedom due to a built-in snow day in their school system. Therefore, there was no school on Monday, the 13th of February, 2017. If you don't know what a built-in snow day is, basically, like in the north here, schools plan for a certain amount of snow days. So if they say they think there's going to be like 3, they would add 3 extra days onto the year. And if none of these snow days got used, they would have to cut 3 days out of the year. So sometimes they do it all at the end of the year. Sometimes they shorten the day by like 10 minutes for the rest of the year. Or sometimes they'll just give you random days off. So this is one day that they had off. They decided to go to the Monon, I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm just going to say Highbridge Trail from now on. But they decide to go there and practice their photography skills while exploring nature. So now we're going to jump back to the morning of February 13th, 2017, to start off into the timeline. At 10 a.m., the girls woke up after having a late night from the sleepover the night before. They then had breakfast and ended up getting bored and started to play around with ideas on what they could go do today. Abby and Libby decided to ask Libby's grandmother, Becky Patty, if they could go hike on High Bridge Trail. This is because Kelsey, Libby's older sister, and Libby had gone there before to walk around and do some geocaching. This was not a huge nature reserve that tons of people are always at. I know where I live, our nature parks and trails are always full of people and bustling. Like, you aren't alone. It's right out in public, and there's normally a lot of friends and family and it's just, there's a lot of people around. This was not like that, though. It wasn't a huge nature reserve that tons of people were always at. It was more secluded. It seemed there were other people, but it is unknown if Libby and Abby actually ran into any of these people or these people saw them that day. There are plenty of YouTube videos that show the area around this bridge, and while it's not like completely secluded, it is fairly secluded. I know I didn't really know like how secluded it was, so I looked up some videos, and it's like really any woodsy nature reserve that doesn't get like a ton of traffic. You aren't by a neighborhood, you aren't really by a road, you're just on trails, but it's not secluded in the fact that like no one is close at all. Like there's houses across the high bridge and you know, it's not like you're in the middle of nowhere. It was perfect for a serene walk, but now I assume it's much more scary for the people of Delphi, Indiana. I know when I was younger and when I was in high school, I think I mentioned this on the last episode of the Delphi murders that I went over, but we would go to this park, and from the park, if you followed the railroad tracks, maybe like a mile, you would hit this old railroad bridge, and under it there was a creek, and there was just walls of graffiti, and we would go there to like take pictures and stuff because we thought it was cool. But other than the train going overhead once every hour, we were the only people out there. It was not like an actual path. It was kind of hard to get to, and it was secluded. And there were times like we'd go there and it looked like people had killed animals there or something along those lines. And I never really worried about it then, but now after digging so deeply into this case, I have no idea what I was thinking. But that's kind of how it goes with most people who were a little irresponsible as kids. So Becky, Libby's grandmother, basically said that if they could find a ride there and back, then they could go. Abby did not ask her mother about going, probably due to just not having her mother there, so she didn't worry about it. But Abby's mother, Anna, stated she probably would have allowed Abby to go with Libby because Abby had been around that area before. Also, there was really no reason not to allow these two girls to go because they were fairly responsible young women. So why not just let them go have fun on their own? This is a point in the timeline where the first sightings of BG, also known as Bridge Guy, which is the name given to the suspect that is the man in the recordings from Libby's phone. Anyways, this is about the time the first sightings of BG are reported. This is before the girls even got to the area. At 12:30 p.m., a woman walking her dogs at the southeast end of the bridge, we're talking about High Bridge here, said she had a conversation with BG. Another report says this woman was not walking her dogs, but saw BG walking around like her neighborhood and went to approach him in their car about fourth a mile south of the High Bridge. When she approached him, he left on foot. This is where the second sketch of the suspect came from. So at 1:23 p.m., Derek German, Libby's father, leaves on an errand for his mother, Becky. At 1:26 to about 1:30 p.m., there is a teenage female witness with friends near Freedom Bridge. Now, I know I've been talking about High Bridge. High Bridge is the railroad bridge that's abandoned. It's kind of worn down. You're not supposed to walk on it. Freedom Bridge is a more widely used bridge. I think it was one constructed solely like for a walking path in between trails or something along those lines. It was a lot less secluded. Anyways, this girl sees BG and says hello, but BG just kind of gives her a creepy look. She stated it was like a frightening look. her description of him was about 5'6", 5'7", and apparently she described him pretty well without seeing the video or pictures, like, from Libby's phone first. So this is one of the witnesses that formed the first sketch. Around 1:30 p.m., after first saying no to Libby and Abby, Kelsey decides that she'll take them to the Mononhai Bridge Trail if they can get a ride home. There are conflicting reports on this all over the internet. Some state that the girls had asked about a week before they went, to go to the bridge, and that Kelsey had said no all week. If this scenario was true, then it would be possible that BG had overheard them sometime in the week before and planned the killing, planned the victims. However, in Kelsey Germain's Debunking Myths video, she states that they had other ideas, basically, on what to do that day, but did not ask Kelsey about taking them to the trail until that morning, so it does not seem as if it was a planned attack against the girls. In between 1:38 and 1:39 p.m., Libby calls her father, Derek, to ask if he could pick them up later, and he agrees. Kelsey then leaves them off at the trails around the same time after confirming they had a ride home. There are also discrepancies on this, stating that the girls didn't call Derek until after Kelsey left, but Kelsey is adamant she would never leave the girls off without knowing they had a ride home. And honestly, I believe her. Derek agreed to pick up the girls around 3 or 3:30 p.m. and stated he would call when he was close to the area. In between 1:45 and 2:07 p.m., a lot of places say it was at 2:07 p.m., but I believe that's the time the Snapchat was opened, not the time it was sent. Anyway, Libby posted a photo of Abby on her Snapchat. Abby was standing on the old railroad bridge. Libby also posted a photo of just the bridge. Around this time, it seems that Abby and Libby noticed a man near them and started talking about him. Although I don't believe there are any recordings of this, it is stated that they had been talking and one of them asked if the man was still following them or something along their lines. In between 2:15 and 2:30 p.m., Libby and Abby were off the southeast end of the bridge and caught that famous video of BG walking towards the girls. We will go over an analysis of the video and pictures later. So when this video was taken, BG was about 65 feet from the south end where Libby and Abby were when the video was caught. Around 2:30 is when the audio recording of the man saying, "Guys, down the hill," was recorded. We'll also talk more about that later. In between 2:30 and 2:45 is the area in which people believed they were murdered. At 2:45 p.m., Cheyenne, Makisha, Engels entered the trail, and around 3 p.m., she took a picture standing on the south end of the bridge. In this picture, there is no one else, and she states she did not hear or see anything at this time. I believe this is why it is assumed the murders happened before 2:45, because if it's you're in the silent woods, you would most likely hear a struggle or something along those lines going on. Cheyenne later said this, quote, "I even walked all the way across the bridge and back. I only saw a guy when I first got there, and another couple of guys once I got on the bridge. I didn't see the girls at all. I also didn't take the trail that leads to the right. I only took the trail that led to the bridge," end quote. In between 3 and 3:15, there was a male and female witness walking along the 501 trail towards the high bridge, and BG passed them, heading towards Freedom Bridge. It was reported that he was wearing no hoodie at this time, and since they were having an argument, the male and female witness were having an argument, the female did not see BG. This is the second witness that contributed to the first sketch. At 3:11 p.m., Derek placed his first call to Libby's phone to state that he is almost at the agreed pickup place. She did not pick up. At 3:13 p.m., Derek called again because he is now at the agreed pickup place. Still no answer, so he then sent a text. At 3:15 p.m., Derek gets out of his car to walk the trails and look for the girls. He's thinking maybe they're not checking their phones, maybe the phones died, something along those lines. Around 3:20 p.m., Derek ran into Dave McCain, also known as the flannel shirt guy, who is not a suspect. He was heading west on the 501 coming from the bridge and states he has not seen the girls. He said there was a couple by the bridge, but no girls. Because of this, Derek chooses to take the 505 trail that does not lead to the bridge, since the girls may have gone that way. In between 3:24 and 3:32, Derek calls Libby's phone, and there are no answers either time. At 3:33, Derek finally called Becky Patty to see if the girls maybe walked home or got home a different way, but they did not. At 3:34 p.m., Derek calls his sister Tara and leaves a message asking if she had talked to the girls. At 3:35 p.m., Derek runs into Dave again as he is walking to Freedom Bridge. At 3:57 p.m., Derek calls Libby once again with no answer. He then proceeds to call Becky again, and Becky calls Kelsey. Kelsey let it go to voicemail the first time, but answers the second time, and she then learns that the girls are essentially missing and states she hasn't heard from them. At this point, Kelsey decides she's going to call into work and go help look for the girls. At 4:17 p.m., Becky tries to call Libby and gets no response. She then calls many of the girls' friends in order to see if they ended up at someone else's home. They had not. At 4:19 p.m., Becky and Tara decide to go to the trails and help look for the girls. At 4:20 p.m., Becky calls her husband Mike and tells him about the girls. He says he's going to leave work right away, and he'll be there in about 30 minutes. At 4:30 p.m., Becky arrives at the trails, where Derek, Tara, and their brother Cody are already there. Kelsey arrives right after her. At this time, Becky calls AT&T to see if they can track Libby's phone, but she does not have Find My Phone installed. Therefore, they cannot. Kelsey and Cody cross the bridge in order to go from home to home and look for the girls. They find nothing here. Around this time, Becky also tries to reach Anna, who is Abby's mother, but she does not answer, so Becky starts driving to her job. On the way there, Anna calls back. Now Anna learns that Abby and Libby are missing, and Anna leaves work and heads to the sheriff's station. At 5 p.m., Mike Patty, which is Libby's grandfather, shows up and joins the search. He tries to call Libby, but now all calls are going straight to voicemail, which either means her phone was purposely turned off or it had died. 5:20 p.m. is when Mike Patty reports the girls missing to police. The first officer is reported to have arrived around 5:25 p.m. And at 5:30, Kelsey decides to go into work for a bit, but right after she gets in, she is called to come back to the police station. Now, at this point, no one's really thinking that the girls are in, like, a huge amount of danger. So that's why Kelsey decides to go to work, and that's why things are going this way. Everyone thinks, oh, they're gonna show up, they just got lost, or maybe one of them got hurt and the other one didn't want to leave her. Something along those lines. No harm, no foul yet. At 6 p.m., volunteers and law enforcement start an official search. But at 6:20 p.m., the sun sets. I don't know what I was going to say after that. Sorry. In between 7 and 8, there was talk about stopping the search, but that did not happen until 11:45 p.m. The Carroll County Sheriff states that there was no reason to believe these girls are in danger and believes they are with friends, so searches will start again in the morning. This is something that is quite common. Police will often call off searches as it gets dark so that people in the search parties do not get hurt. This was not uncommon for really any case, especially in the middle of winter. It does seem odd to me, though, that the county sheriff stated the girls were with their friends and they were probably fine, because by this point, I feel like there was obviously something wrong. It had been basically confirmed that these girls were not with friends, and it was February, so exposure is a huge risk here. It was not safe to assume these girls were okay, and obviously we learned that later in the case. Kelsey stated in her video that really no one stopped searching. So many people were still with the family in the woods that night looking for the girls. So, moving on to the timeline of Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. At 7:40 a.m. is the sunrise, and at 8:15 a.m., searches start again. Around 9 a.m., divers and canine units were brought in. And that seemed odd to me as well, because if police assume that the girls were okay last night, why are they bringing in these services, especially the dive teams? At 12 p.m., a volunteer made the unfortunate discovery of the bodies of Libby and Abby. These bodies were found on Logan property, I believe that is the man's last name, on the north side of Deer Creek. Here is a quote of basically what happened. So Kelsey was searching on a path immediately below the high bridge. Another search party near the river found a shoe. They yelled up to Kelsey asking about the type of shoe they found. I believe it was a black Nike. And they were asking whether it belonged to one of the girls. It was a shoe type, not color, as some reports indicate. Kelsey yelled back that it was Libby's shoe. At that point, one member of the party where the shoe had been found saw two deer. He used his phone to zoom in on the deer and shifted his view angle down a little bit from the deer and saw the bodies. Apparently, some of the girls' clothing was also found in the river, but that is unconfirmed. At 12:39 p.m., news outlets are starting to ask why Amber Alerts were not issued for Abby and Libby when they were found to be missing. At 1 p.m., searches changed to evidence recovery. So there was most likely multiple crime scenes due to them starting on the bridge and ending up across the river. But there had been so many people walking through and around possible crime scenes in the woods, so there may be a lot of evidence that was unusable or pretty much tampered with. At 1:05 p.m., news outlets are reporting on two bodies being found, but there's no identification yet. At 2 p.m., police have press conferences confirming two bodies have been found, but still no identification. Delphi School's superintendent states that it was his understanding the bodies were those of Libby and Abby, and says grief counselors will be available. We will listen to that little bit right here.
With me this morning, I know this has been such a terrible 24 hours for you. How are you holding up?
I'm holding up fine. Our thoughts and prayers go with the families and the rescuers and the searchers. That's in our thoughts right now the most. As we start today, our first priority is getting our schools opened up, getting our students to school safely, and making sure that any service needed is there for them as they come in, students and staff.
Around 4:32 p.m., Sergeant Kim Riley stated they were going home and the autopsy for the two bodies was scheduled for 8 a.m. On Wednesday, February 15th, 2017, at 8 a.m., the autopsies are performed in Terre Haute. At 12 p.m., the Carroll County Sheriff's Department and state police had a joint news conference and confirmed that the bodies were those of Abby and Libby. Around 7 p.m., the first photo of BG was released. At this point, the police were saying he's not a suspect, but they would like to talk with him. On Thursday, February 16th, 2017, at 7:45 p.m., state police serve a search warrant at the Maxwell home. Supposedly, a reliable source stated that Libby had been talking to Logan Maxwell on social media, but no arrests were made at this time. So now we're going to skip forward to the press conference on February 22nd, 2019.
Escape during these periods of time, so I've only had a couple of other situations in my lifetime. I'm able to stand before you and say that. Why Libby? Why Abby? Why Delphi? Why Carroll County? Why the region? Why the state? Why even in the nation? I say that because this is a classic example and a clear example that evil lives amongst us. To the family, to the community, the region, the state, as a leader of the Indiana State Police, I say, I am so very sorry. See, this isn't like TV. There's a perception that this can be solved very quickly. Anything that we do can be solved very quickly, but this is a testament that it can't, and we need you. We've needed you since last week. We need you today, and we need you tomorrow. And likely, we'll need the media all across this nation. So from a simple guy like me to you, I say thank you. Libby and Abby need you. Please do not rationalize tips away. Rationalize what you think that might not be important away. By thinking he would never do that to another human being. Or think, what I know doesn't matter. Let folks like the people that are standing behind me with such incredible passion and commitment and dedication to this profession make that determination.
We do have some new information for you today. It's in the form of an audio file from the cell phone that Liberty German had with her at the time. We're not going to play everything that we have, but Liberty had the presence of mind to turn on her video camera. Again, we're not going to be able to share everything with you, but we are going to share this audio clip with you momentarily with the hope that somebody will recognize this voice. And I want to be very clear that what you're about to hear is just four short words. Excuse me, three words. Down the hill. You're going to hear this played four times. The audio quality is not superb, but there's enough there that somebody could recognize this person's voice. And as Superintendent Carter said, not to rationalize away. If you hear this today and you think, my God, that sounds like fill in the blank, call us. Make an anonymous tip. Tell us who you think it is. Let us investigate it. If it's not the right person, they'll just be out a little bit of time and they'll be cleared and they can go on and they'll never know that you called. But you may tell us who the right person was. And you could be the person that helps us to solve this horrible crime. Micah, play the clip, please. Play it one more time.
now I am going to play the audio from the press conference a year after the murder.
Science is going to help us. Investigative technique is going to help us. The incredibly committed personnel will help us. But the final puzzle, piece to this puzzle, is going to be somebody thinking that is not right. I know a person that I don't think he's capable of that, but I'm going to report it and then let us vet it. What we don't want people to do is to get online and start comparing photographs of people that they think are involved with the photo that we have on the high bridge and then putting a photo of somebody that they think next to him. Because imagine what happens to that individual if he's not the one. So that's not our goal. We don't want to do that to an individual. Let us vet him. Let us vet the information. Let us vet the photograph and work towards a successful conclusion. We cannot allow this person to coexist. What we don't want people to do is to get online and start comparing photographs of people that they think are involved with the photo that we have on the high bridge and then putting a photo of somebody that they think next to him. Because imagine what happens to that individual.
And now we are going to play the press conference from 2019. In this press conference is when the sketch changed, and many people became very concerned with this. But law enforcement states that this is now the primary sketch. If you've seen the sketches, this is the one of the man without the hat or the beard, and he looks quite a bit younger. Many believe that now they had been looking for the wrong person for 2 years, though, and that was very concerning to the community. This new sketch comes from the first witness, the woman walking her dogs. It is so different from the first sketch, but in this press conference, they do state that they changed their investigative style, and this means they could have gotten new information as well. It could also be that they believe the suspect is younger, so these two sketches could possibly be the same person, but he is now younger than they thought. At this time, the video was also released, and the audio with the word guys in it. This video could help by identifying a unique gait or a unique walk to someone, and the recording shows more of a Midwestern type of talk now.
Information's being released today is the result of literally thousands and thousands of hours of extraordinary investigative efforts by Delphi, Carroll County, the FBI, the Indiana State Police, and countless other agencies. After you hear what we're going to release today, I'm going to ask for your continued support, your continued understanding, your empathy and compassion. Please keep in mind, the person talking is one person and is the person on the bridge with the girls. This is not two different people speaking. Please listen to it very, very carefully. We are also releasing video recovered from Libby's phone. This video has never before been previously released. The video shows a suspect walking on the bridge. When you see the video, watch the person's mannerisms as they walk. Watch the mannerisms as he walks. Do you recognize the mannerisms as being someone that you might know? Remember, he is walking on the former railroad bridge. Because of the deteriorated condition of the bridge, the suspect is not walking naturally due to the spacing between the tiles. We try so hard to understand how a person could do something like this to two children. I recently watched a movie called The Shack. And there's also a book that talks so well about evil, about death, and about eternity to the murderer. During the course of this investigation, we have concluded the first sketch released will become secondary as of today. The result of the new information and intelligence over time leads us to believe the sketch, which you will see shortly, is the person responsible for the murders of these two little girls. We likely have interviewed you or someone close to you. We know that this is about power to you. And you want to know what we know. And one day, you will. A question to you. What will those closest to you think of when they find out that you brutally murdered two little girls? Two children. Only a coward would do such a thing. We are confident that you have told someone what you have done. Or at the very least, they know because of how different you are since the murders.
In this final press conference, well, not final, but I guess most recent, he mentions the movie The Shack, seemingly out of nowhere, and it has gained a lot of speculation. Here is a summary of the movie plot. In The Shack, the main character grew up abused, had a crisis of faith, and has to decide if he's on the side of good or evil. A sociopathic narcissist wants to be perceived as a hero, but has a hollow sense of self and minimal empathy. He wants to be perceived as good, like in a movie. He may not at his core understand how to be good, but he can understand how to be perceived as good, likely by embracing the church. He intellectually understands good Christians don't murder girls, so his actions are incongruent with his self-perception. He needs to decide, and he, like the main character in the film, is in power and in control of his decision. The implication is that he can redeem himself in the eyes of those who matter most, his family, the general public, the media, by doing the right thing, showing he has that scrap of conscience and isn't the coward by confessing. So that was kind of partially a summary and partially how this person on Reddit sees it connect with the case. Many people believe he was just saying this off the top of his head, but when you listen or view this press conference, there are a few things that stick out that make me think this part about The Shack was completely scripted. If you are watching the press conference, you can see him reference his papers quite a bit. If you are listening, you can tell that there were really no words or time wasted in his speech. He knew what he was going to say, and it seemed like there was a purpose for all of it. Throughout this case, law enforcement has been very selective about the information they release. They have been planning it out as they go, but they have been doing so very carefully. I believe they have a suspect or suspect in this case, and this was a specific call or reference to BG. Other than that, it would really make no sense to be put in this case. He starts his talk about it and stops it so quickly. Here, let's listen to that part again.
We try so hard to understand how a person could do something like this to two children. I recently watched a movie called The Shack. And there's also a book that talks so well about evil, about death, and about eternity. To the murderer.
Now I'm going to go over some pieces of Kelsey German's debunking video. This is from a video done by Kelsey German, and this is not my own. So she states, Libby's phone did ping on multiple cell towers, but that does not mean she was moving. Since the town was so small, it's almost impossible to be in one spot and not have multiple towers ping. Kelsey stated, you could cross the house and be on another one. Also, no one refused a lie detector test. The family has been very cooperative, and the family works really well with law enforcement. Cody, Libby and Kelsey's uncle, his post on social media was a song. It was not about the case. It was a joke between him and a friend, but it had nothing to do with the case. It was very inappropriate song, but nothing really, I guess, harmful, because it was just a song. Cody was confirmed with an alibi, and he is not a suspect. I found screenshots of the exchange between Cody and his friends that I believe she is talking about. The exchange went like this. Friend, bro, she's 14 though. Oh, by the way, this is where I say a few things in, I guess you could say, adult language. So if you don't want to hear that, just skip 30 seconds and it'll be over. So friend, bro, she's 14 though. Cody, it's hard to find that baby is mine. I only nutted in her one time. Friend number two, but she know how to tweak it though. First friend, her daddy said to have her home by 10. Cody, I said, but I'm not trying to be her friend. I'm just really trying to get it in. So that was the exchange between Cody and the friends that has had so much speculation, when really it's just a song. And I think it's obvious it's just a song because it rhymes and, you know, all that stuff. Anyways, next, Kelsey discussed the Renner video. This was the first one she did alone, and she was nervous and just kept on talking. She may have made some confusing statements, but they are not true. One confusing statement she said she made was stating that there was 20 kids there when she dropped the girls off. What she meant was that there were about 20 people there throughout the day, but not when she dropped them off. Now we're going to jump into the picture / video / recording analysis. This is a combination of a video done by Michael Katt on YouTube. He does a lot of informative Delphi murder videos. And this is also some of my own speculation. So I recently watched a YouTube video done by Michael Katt. He lives around the area and has some very informative points. He looked at the still pictures and analyzed them in this video. On the right leg of BG, you can see a brown thing near the top of the coat, or near the bottom of the coat, near the top of the pants. Most believe it is a fanny pack, and that seems like the most probable thing. This fanny pack could be holding a kill kit or a weapon of some kind. On the left leg near the hip, it almost looks as if there's a holster there. This does kind of seem odd for someone to have out in the open on a hiking trail, so it could be a phone clip or just a blur in the video. But some people do believe it was a holster. Michael also points out a flat part in the man's upper left leg. He states it could be a tablet and compares it to a picture of a tablet in a pocket. I cannot understand why a tablet would be needed in the woods. I think it is more likely a notebook or something along those lines. Some killers or criminals like to catalog their crimes in some way, so maybe this man was doing just this. He likely had been stalking these woods for days or weeks, and probably had a lot of downtime to observe and record things about the area, about his plan, etc. Michael continues by stating that this man could either be wearing a hat, or it could just be his hair. In different pictures, it looks differently. I believe that he was wearing a hat based on witness accounts, and also because he would just want to be hidden as much as possible. Lastly, Michael states that it looks like the man is wearing a hoodie that is bunched up. It seems odd that this man would feel the need to wear a hoodie and jacket on this unusually nice day when even teen girls were wearing only sweaters. So it kind of seems to me like he was trying to layer his clothing to obstruct what his body may look like and somewhat hide his. Now we are going to jump into the profiling and suspects. This is a profile of my own mind along with the knowledge from the police and articles on the case, but these suspects are not my own. These are suspects from articles and theories online. The police state that their suspect is a white male with reddish-brown hair, 5'6" to 5'10", 160 to 220 pounds, and aged 18 to 40. This was a person who had stalked this area for a long time, therefore it was most likely someone local. He most likely lived in the area for a while before the murders and possibly after. He could still be in the area today. People are being urged to look at people who live in the community or moved shortly after the murders. He was most likely someone who people had seen on the trail before because he had to know the area to plan his crime. This man was being organized in how he was planning his crime. However, he was not organized in his victim selection. He was just waiting for opportunity. He was planning his fantasy crime through these weeks or months. He probably sat in waiting for weeks before this case, somewhere hidden where he could see the trail. On this day, he sat and waited to make sure the girls were alone and took this one opportunity. He could have had a kill kit on him or have been hiding weapons in his layered clothing and went after the girls. The plan could have been very different, but it may not have gone as planned when he actually executed it. He did have a plan on how to control people, his getaway route, his area to kill, so that he was not seen. This seems like he was either a career criminal and maybe had just never been caught, or had advanced knowledge of crime and or forensics. He knew he had to get this done efficiently without being seen and without being noticed. He was seen by less than 5 people that day. No one even saw or heard the crime. There supposedly is DNA, but not enough to incriminate him. It is known that there is DNA, but the DNA is from multiple people, so it is not very helpful in this case. Police would have to have DNA from people to rule them out in order to get the singular killer's DNA. Much of this touch DNA could also be from other kids the girls went to school with, or friends and family. This guy knew what he was doing. There was also most likely a sexual motive for him, since in killing teenage girls there is no monetary gain, and it can't really be a passion killing when you are randomly selecting people. Our idea of a sexual motive may not be the same as his. Rape or normal sexual assault is not necessary. This man could have gotten a sexual feeling from simply the act of scaring the girls or some specific thing in the crime, and that could be the sexual motive for him. There has never been a police-released info that there was sexual assault or sexual motive, but they have looked into a few pedophiles and rapists, so it is assumed by many people. I've decided to take the suspect's part out of this episode just because there are really no persons of interest that law enforcement has confirmed. So I don't really want to mention any of them, but there are some that have been cleared and some that are only believed to be suspects by online forum communities. And we don't really know what the police or who the police are looking into right now. We all hope they're close to finding the killer, but we have no idea at this point. So I just decided to get rid of the suspects part and get rid of some controversy with that. I hope from the beginning of this episode until now, you've gained a lot of insight into the case and just gotten the timeline and all of that in your head. But first, I want to clarify some false info that people are getting online. The LaFons are not suspects. I see it so much where people are like, what about Scott LaFon? What about Aaron LaFon? Wasn't he working on like the benches that day or something? No, this is false information. Simply assuming someone is part of a case without having any criminal background or without law enforcement even looking at them is harmful to that person's life. So all I'm saying here is that as of right now, they are not suspects. So please do not be spreading those side-by-side pictures. Sharing side-by-side comparisons with the sketches And this is very harmful to the case. No one should do this. If you have someone you think looks like this sketch, give a tip to police. Do not share it on social media because that could hurt an innocent person.
What we don't want people to do is to get online and start comparing photographs of people that they think are involved with the photo that we have on the high bridge, and then putting a photo of somebody that they think next to him. Because imagine what happens to that individual.
Now, for the last part of this episode, we are going to go into a few theories. I don't have much on any of these theories, but I wanted to share the basis of them at least. So the first theory is the catfish theory. Some have the belief that Abby and Libby were talking to someone online and had gone to meet them at the bridge that day. However, there's really no record of this, and it wouldn't make sense to me. Why would they record someone they were set to meet, and why? Like, they just don't seem like the type of girls to do this. There was a report of law enforcement telling the community to, like, track or check what their kids are doing online, and I think this is where this theory came from. A lot of people thought they were telling them that because of the murders, but honestly, that's just something you should do anyway. The next theory is the geocaching theory. For those that don't know, geocaching is an outdoor recreational activity in which participants use a GPS receiver to basically play hide and seek with containers, also known as caches. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, so I'm sorry if you do geocaching and I'm just butchering it. You log that you have been there, and it's kind of like a game. One geocache was actually right near the Monon High Bridge Trail, and this one was shut down right after the murders happened. I believe it was shut down by law enforcement, and that caused a lot of people to think maybe this theory has some substance to it. The theory is that someone, or maybe just anyone who came to geocache in that location, maybe he was just watching whoever went to the certain one or near the certain one, and he planned for them to be his victim. So the theory I think is most plausible is just the random victim selection. Like I said before, I think this man had been in the area many times in the weeks or even months before the murders and was planning the area, but not the victims. This theory states that this man was lying in wait somewhere and watched the girls for a while to make sure they were alone. When he saw they were alone, he went after them. This is the end of this episode. This is the end of the theories and the suspects. Like I said, it is just after the third anniversary of Abby and Libby's deaths, and I feel so sorry for the family that they lost these two beautiful girls, and that justice has not been served yet. I hope 2020 is the year everyone, like, gets the justice they deserve. I think police are close to finding the suspect, even though they have been for quite a while, but maybe this is the year the families will finally get that closure. So let's just hope for that. And I will see you guys next Wednesday. If you want to stay involved with The Great Unsolved, we are on Twitter at Great Unsolved and on Instagram at The Great Unsolved.
This isn't like TV. There's a perception that this can be solved very quickly. Anything that we do can be solved very quickly, but this is a testament that it can't, and we need you. We've needed you since last week. We need you today, and we need you tomorrow. And likely, we'll need the media all across this nation. So from a simple guy like me to you, I say thank you. Libby and Abby need you. Please do not rationalize tips away. Rationalize what you think that might not be important away. By thinking he would never do that to another human being. Or think, what I know doesn't matter. Let folks, like the people that are standing behind me, as